In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, yeah.
Let's all go to the
movies,
lobby.
Life,
Let's all go to
much
the
more.
Lobby.
Alan Adams joining us here in studio on our Monday afternoon. Hello there, Al.
Why, hello. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm well, thank you.
How'd the weekend go?
Pretty good. We had the extra day because of the observance of Veterans Day on Friday. So, you know, that's always nice to get that extra time.
Yeah.
You know, had to work a little bit and do some things, but that's okay. You know, it's, well, that's just the nature of the beast.
Indeed.
You
indeed.
Know? But yeah, we had a pretty good weekend, all things considered.
Good. We got a fun weekend coming up as well. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening Friday, Saturday.
Man, I tell you what, it is just, you know, you think you've got all the time in the world and then it's just like, you wake up one day and it's like, oh yeah, okay, well that's happening. So let's giddy up. The Improv Me Festival is making its triumphant return to the Bangor Arts Exchange. We did our first year there last year. It was very successful. We look forward to being back there again. We've got performances Friday and Saturday nights. For regular attendees of focus group shows, just as a heads up, we will be starting these shows at 7 p.m. instead of 8 p.m. One of the lessons we learned from last year was starting at 8 led to a very late ending for both audiences and performers, because a lot of folks are traveling and they're traveling back that night. You know, they're not staying for the evening. So giving them a little bit of extra time without being too exhausted on the road seemed like the right thing to do. And, you know, it's one thing when it's just, you know, our usual band of goofballs and we're up there for, you know, an hour 10 or whatever, no big deal. But we've got a lot of talent coming this time. And I think, honestly, if we get people out of there in under 2 hours, I'm going to be shocked. For both nights. It's going to be really fun. We've got a really good collection of old friends, some newcomers. It's going to be really great.
And three groups performing each night.
It's funny. We had a sort of 11th hour issue with scheduling with one of our Friday groups. And so I reached out to some other friends in hopes of getting someone to fill in that slot. And I got two yeses instead of one.
Oh, well, there.
So it will be four performing groups on Friday night.
Wow.
It will be the focus group, Obvi. We will be joined by Teachers Lounge Mafia, our old friend Dan Ryder and his group. They were unable to participate last year. It was the first festival that we've done that they weren't part of, so they're very excited to be back joining us. Also joining us will be Balderdash Academy, who joined us last year, they're a wonderful group of folks. And I'm very excited about this. We're also going to be joined by the University of Maine's Improv Insanity. They're going to come and do a short set with us as well. I think that's going to be a lot of fun Friday night. And then Saturday night, it's going to be us again. You know, we're the hosts. We could do what we want. And we will be joined by our fellow Bangor Improv group, Queen City Improv. I'm very excited that he agreed to come back. Capital City Improv, Dennis Price. He is bringing back his improvised Hallmark movie. That absolutely slayed last year, and I can only imagine it's going to be just as effective this time around. Either night, you can't go wrong. You know, for the low price of $20, you can go to both nights.
Ooh, there you go.
Something to consider.
That's a good plan right there. This weekend, Bangor Arts Exchange, the Improv Me Festival. Now, this is not the 10th festival because of COVID, but I think it was 10 years ago that we did the first one.
I think that's right. I was actually trying to do that math on the way home from work this evening, and I think that's right. I want to say it's the 8th festival, but the 10th year.
That sounds about right.
I think that's right, but I'd have to go back and investigate further. Does anyone really need me to do that?
No, I don't think so. No. Alan Adams with us here on Downtown. Well, let's talk movies. What did you get a chance to see?
Got to see a couple of good ones this weekend. I went to the theater.
Nice.
To see the latest incarnation in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I went to see The Marvels. I also stayed home and on Netflix watched David Fincher's latest film, The Killer, starring Michael Fassbender. Which one would you like to talk about first?
Well, let's start with the superheroes.
Yeah, that sounds good. So the Marvels, it's interesting where we're at as far as the sort of superhero movie industrial complex. Simply because, by all accounts, this movie looks to have had the single worst opening weekend in the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, still did tens of millions of dollars, but you know they're used to much higher numbers.
Right.
And you know some of that can be chalked up to the scare quotes, you know, superhero fatigue. I think that's probably a part of it, not as big a part as some would have you believe. I think another significant part of it is there's a certain segment of the population that doesn't care for the idea of a superhero movie fronted by not one, not two, but three female heroes, two of whom are women of color. You know, a lot of bad faith arguments being made out there.
That upset some people, didn't it?
And a lot of you know, review bombing. You know, it's remarkable how many bad reviews a movie can get before it even comes out.
So, tells you a lot.
You know what I mean? And it's just so, but, you know, all that being said, like, I'm not someone who's going to sit here and say that the MCU is beyond criticism, because it's not. Like, and especially as we get further and further into this whole thing, like, this is the 33rd MCU movie.
Wow.
They've made 33 of these, and that's not even taking into account the assorted Disney Plus television series, of which I think there are six or seven at this point. And the truth is, if you aren't familiar with at least with a significant percentage of what's come before, this movie's not necessarily going to be super easy to follow in terms of narrative and plot. That being said, I don't know that you necessarily need a full understanding of narrative and plot to still have a good time watching this movie. Which is in itself a bit of a departure from previous iterations of the MCU, because if you want to go deep, you can definitely do some homework on this movie, but you don't have to, and still you could still have a good time. The basic gist, you know, I could try to get into the plot machinations right now, but the truth is, even trying to explain it is going to make it sound like I have some sort of fever. The basic gist is our hero, Captain Marvel, played by Brie Larson, is working on helping broker some sort of intergalactic peace between the warlike Kree Empire and the struggling Skrull people. This is all stuff that is spelled out in pretty great detail in the recent Secret Invasion Disney Plus television show, which I have not completed. So there was a lot of stuff on the, you know, on the periphery that I didn't necessarily get, but I was able to fill in the gaps largely due to literal decades of comic book nerddom. Even if they depart a little bit, I can still follow. But we also spend time with Monica Rambeau, who is a character that is familiar to viewers of WandaVision, played by Tayana Paris, and Iman Vellani, who plays Kamala Khan, who was the star of the Ms. Marvel television show. These three come together and battle against it's kind of your typical, like, who really cares big bad for a lot of these MCU movies. It's not like your overarching, like, arc villain, so it doesn't necessarily matter. However, there's a nice touch in that our big bad, also a woman.
No, good.
You know,
I like
so,
that.
You know,
sure.
Keep it, you know, and it's like, I'm on board with that. But the truth is, I was less enamored of the overall plot of this film, but I'm much more enjoyed the tone. It's been a while since one of these movies took a step back and was like, hey, you know what? This is supposed to be fun. Like, is anyone having a good time at these, you know? And it's like, and there are exceptions, outliers, like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, I think, are a good example, and the Ant-Man movies to an extent. But it's like, this one really has some fun with comic book tropes, has some fun with the buddy comedy chemistry, the chemistry between the three leads is outstanding. Like, they are wonderful to watch on screen together. Look, man, like, they, you know, there's a, I don't want to spoil too much, but I'll put it this way. You know what? There's a musical number.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. There, that happens. It makes sense to an extent in context. And there's also a pretty significant plot point revolving around kittens. So,
well, there,
you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh yes, comic books are, you know, they're, I appreciate the value of viewing them as literature. And, you know, there, the argument's been made that the breadth of Marvel Comics is as widespread a fictional undertaking as something like Proust, but I mean, it's people in spandex with, you know, shooting lasers out of their hands. You know, right. you gotta accept the sort of inherent silliness to
sure.
it. And if you can lean into that while still, you know, creating compelling characters, I think the other stuff will kind of fall into line. And I think that's something that I think works really well with this movie. And you can tell that I feel like the Suits maybe got their hands on it after director Nia DaCosta, who, by the way, first black woman to helm one of these movies, after she left the project, I think, in post-production, I think some other fingers may have been on the scales. And, you know, and it's very typical with a lot of these movies, particularly the most recent iterations. Some issues with the technical aspects of things, like some of the CGI looks a little shaky, a little unfinished, simply because, you know, a lot of this stuff got sort of undermined by the various strikes that have happened, which, speaking to, we talked about the box office a second ago, I think, you know, the truth is, like, these, no one could go out and promote this movie until, what, like, 3 days ago, four
right,
days ago,
right.
You know, and they hit the ground running. They did their best, you know, lots of social media stuff, you know, surprise theater appearances. I think Brie Larson was on The Tonight Show on Friday. Like, they tried really hard to make that last push, but it's not the same as, you know, being able to do Comic-Con panels and
right.
all that and all that jazz. So I think there are a lot of factors working against this movie's sort of box office success. But I think as a movie, like, it works. It's imperfect. And again, like, we're 33 films in, Rich. Like, there's bound to be a degree of diminishing returns. And we're seeing some of that. I'm not entirely sure that you can use this film's reception and relative commercial critical success as any kind of indicator, because so many weird sort of outlying factors, things that probably aren't going to be repeated, at least not in the near future, you know, kind of lined up against it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. There is a stinger, like a credits scene, that is a pretty significant reveal with regard to where we might be going forward. So that will be, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it's worth noting, as of right now, there is precisely one MCU movie on the books for next year. So it's like, so they're, I don't know if they're pumping, if the brake pumping was always part of the plan, or if that was accelerated by the writers and actor strikes.
I wonder, too, if a film like this, because again, 33 in, maybe there isn't quite the sense of urgency to get there, but with Thanksgiving coming and a big week for kids home with not a whole lot to do, I wonder if it's a movie that will maybe not have too much drop off from week one to weeks two and three.
You know, that's a good point, especially when you consider that it is one of the few of these movies that is headlined, you know, has one of its headliners, not just a woman, but a teenager.
Mm.
Like, so it's like, you know, one imagines that there might be some sort of resonance there. The truth is, like, it seems like they're maybe realizing that the saturation point has been reached, and maybe giving people a chance to look forward to stuff a little bit more might be the way to go. But again, like, it's difficult to say exactly what went on with you know, this particular movie. But it will be. But as I said, like, I had a really good time. You know, my wife, who has done considerably less of the homework than I have, also had a really good time. look, you know, you see a bunch of space kittens floating around, and they're playing memories, for God's sake. Like, you're just like, okay, like, I don't know if this is for everyone, but it's definitely for me.
There you go. Alan Adams with us here on Downtown. All right, tell us a little bit about the Killers.
Okay, so we'll lead with this. Like, I'm in the bag for David Fincher. I think he is an absolutely brilliant filmmaker. I think he has made some of the best movies of the last 25 years. He's an immense talent, both in terms of his writing and his directorial sense, his eye, his aesthetic, like the whole thing. Like, he's just the total package. And so I was very curious to see another sort of Netflix joint from him. Like, it's because it's interesting. It's, you know, you never know who of these sort of like these auteurs, because I feel like Fincher's, I mean, his might be like his is probably the last generation of like full on legit auteur filmmakers. Like, I just don't know that anyone in this most recent upcoming generation, I just don't know that anyone else has. I just don't know that new filmmakers have the chance to develop that kind of juice. Like, you know, they'll make a movie, an indie or two, and then someone throws them the keys to an MCU movie,
right?
And you know, and those types of films just aren't about the filmmaker. And so, so it's interesting to see Fincher do his work, but yeah, it's based on a French graphic novel called The Killer. As I said, it stars Michael Fassbender. He is our titular killer, but it's got a great cast. Arliss Howard's in it, Sala Baker, Sophie Charlotte. Tilda Swinton is very good in this movie. Like, typically weird Tilda Swinton, but like, that's what you want. Like, you don't hire Tilda Swinton to be normal. But yeah, it's basically, and it's so simple. Like, that's the thing. It's so wonderfully simple. It's basically like you have a professional assassin. You don't know his name. You never learn his name. So much of what we see and hear is from his perspective. So we get a lot of internalized voiceover where he sort of walks us through his process while in the process. It's really fascinating. A lot of really good silent work from Fassbender, particularly in the film's opening, the opening sequence, where it's basically just him waiting to do a hit, essentially. Like, his on-screen character never talks. Everything we hear from him is via voiceover. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's an extended period where the guy on screen isn't talking. And it all goes sideways in the way that things sometimes do in these sorts of assassination type movies. And what follows is he basically goes through and tries to figure out what went wrong, and subsequently has to take into his own hands dealing with the repercussions of his failure. And so, that, as you might imagine, that involves a lot of assassin stuff. in a very good way. Like, I mean that in the best possible way. But yeah, he just it's so like there's a methodical sort of vibe to him. Like, you get the character is treated as almost a tradesman in a lot of ways. Like, it's just like as he explains the job, he's like, you know, I'm not particularly smart. You know, I'm not like, you know, there's nothing special about me. Like, if you want to do this job, a lot of it is really boring. Like, you know, like, you have to be patient. And we get a lot of that sort of surprising kind of insight. Meanwhile, I got more of a kick out of it. It's funny because I'm not usually a music guy, but both of these films had musical aspects that really struck me. His whole deal is like when he's getting ready to go, like he has a very specific work playlist.
He's got a walk-up song.
Rich, it's the Smiths. It's all the Smiths. And it's just like, of course it is. Yeah. It's such a weird but appropriate choice. And it's just like, oh, okay. So like, that's very much a David Fincher.
Sure.
Thing. You know, that's like, he has such a great grasp of how music is, can be valued in the work that he's doing. It's such a wonderful choice, but yeah, we just follow this guy as he sort of goes through and tries to, clean up the aftermath of his mistakes and deal with, the people who, maybe are, you know, maybe want him to suffer some consequences for the actions or inactions as they may be. About 2 hours, really taut, tight pacing, tour de force performance by Fassbender. He's so good. Like, I mean, I'm a big fan of his anyway, this is a really wonderful marriage of filmmaker and actor, I think. Especially when you're dealing with a role that is largely, you know, there are other actors, supporting actors around the periphery, but it really is, it relies on him a lot. And it relies on him physically because so much of what we hear from him is voiceover. And so it's like all this internal monologue stuff. And so we're watching this guy move through the world and we're kind of getting this wonderful sort of insight onto how his brain is operating while all of this is happening. It's just, it was a different sort of take and one I wasn't expecting, but one that really, really worked for me. You know, and it's got all the hallmarks of your standard Fincher. Like it's got some moments of, surprising unpleasantness mixed in. But aesthetically, it's so stunning to look at. And no one manages to. He has this wonderful knack of evoking the character of a place. And when you have, when your main character, the person you've got at the center of the frame, isn't talking. Like that ability to sort of turn your setting into another character is huge. Like it's such a huge benefit to a movie like this. And Fincher, I don't know that there's anybody better at doing it than Fincher is. It's wild that this movie's on Netflix to me. Like it's the sort of thing where I expect there to be some awards buzz about this simply because Fassbender's so good and it's Fincher I think the Academy owes him, is this the one? Who knows?
So no release to theaters planned?
I think what Netflix tends to do, especially with movies like this, I think they do like limited, like big city releases, ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure this has hit the festival circuit. But yeah, for the most part, like it's just... I mean, it's a Netflix movie, and it's wild to think that, you know, like if you had told me 10 years ago that, that some of the biggest filmmakers and were making some of the biggest movies, were going to be working directly for streaming services, whether you're talking about Fincher on Netflix or, you know, Scorsese making Killers of the Flower Moon for Apple. Yes, I know that got a theatrical release, but Apple bankrolled it. You know, I mean, it's so remarkable how quickly and thoroughly the landscape has changed. And again, that's a large part of why we spent the last few months hearing about these strikes because of that rapid shift, because no one really knows what's coming next. And it's just going to accelerate, especially since as you shared with listeners, before I came on, like that Beatles song, like it's like, what's next, Rich?
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Like, what's next? Like, I mean,
well, that's why it was so important for actors and writers to get this settled now, because everything's changing so quickly.
Right. And like, and I mean, that's like, I'm not going to, that's not like top tier pantheon Beatles, but it, like, it's clearly a Beatles song.
Mm.
Like, to a weird extent, like I didn't feel super comfortable while I was listening
to it.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a catchy tune, like, and it's you know, but it's just one of those things where in the back of your head you're just thinking, like robots made this.
Yeah.
Like robots made this happen, and again, like I don't have a lot of irrational fears, Rich, but robots are one of them, and it's just it just seems like I suppose I should just settle in because it's happening.
be a while before they can do improv at any level.
You know what? Fingers crossed. I think the sense of humor is probably going to be the last thing that they automate.
Because they can say yes, but not and.
Yeah, it's like a one or a zero. That's all they got.
That's it. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Don't forget the Improv Me Festival, Friday, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, both nights at the Bangor Arts Exchange. $10 gets you in the door for the best improv comedy talent in the whole state of Maine.
Gonna be good.
All right. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll take a break. 20 minutes to go before 6 o'clock here on Downtown.
Sweats Tire is a family-owned business serving